It's Thursday, October 15th, 2015, and you're listening to Last Time on Video Games, the show about retro video games and sometimes some other stuff. You're listening to episode 123, Snow Broding. Runtime for this episode is 50 minutes. Hello, and welcome to Last Time on Video Games, the podcast that works the body, yeah. My name is Jeremy.
Well, I'm going to choose and pick the best one. Screw your body. I'm Tyler.
I'm the champion, and my name is Zach.
I'm playing footsie with Zach. I'm Alex.
That's awkward.
That's what's attacking my foot.
Apparently Alex's foot.
He's been making this really confused face, and so I just keep poking him with my toes.
Since we no longer have our segment where we rank all our games to fill time, we decided to invite a guest star on to fill time.
No. Tyler told me y'all were playing 1080, and I'm like, oh man, I loved that game when I was a kid. I'm going to be on this podcast, okay?
So here we are.
If you haven't listened to our old episodes with Alex, you should. We did an Animal Crossing one,
Sonic
and a Gunstar Heroes one, and a Sonic the Hedgehog one.
Kind of.
There were like 900 people on the Animal Crossing one.
Over 9,000.
It was a very crowded room.
It was. We had to rent out a convention center.
Stadium seating.
All right. So I guess guests first. Ladies first. That's a term. Ladies first. Alex, have you been playing anything interesting or that you want to talk about?
I've been gutting my kitchen.
Sounds like a messy job. The entrails get everywhere.
Yeah.
On that note, we finally completed our contract with Jeff, the Dark Lord of Cabinetry.
Cool. Did he try to swindle you out of everything at the last moment or challenge you to some sort of fiddle duel?
No, he did offer to save my aunt in exchange for my marriage, but I don't have an aunt that I really care about, so...
I hear you guys also did something else that was exciting in video game Jace.
Alex is making a squee face.
A Jace.
Yeah,
keep
that
up
was,
the slang, bro.
We did a physical, in-real-life escape room.
What the hell is an escape room?
Yeah, I'm getting there.
Well, it's a room that you go to after escaping from stuff. It's a palm shoulder.
No,
oh,
that's
okay, so it's Fallout.
No. Tyler's got it all wrong. Way back in the 90s, there were a whole series of video games where pretty much you don't have any information. You start in a room, and you have to point and click to get out.
I felt like it was the 2000s.
Those are still around, mostly in Japan.
You click through, you find clues, you solve little riddles, and you get out of the room. Same idea, but in real life.
There were four engineers, and two other engineers, and two high school students.
I'm still surprised, listening to you guys talk, that you guys actually figured out the puzzles the way they had them set up, and not just MacGyvered your way out.
So if the high school students solve enough puzzles, they level up and become, like, super engineers, right?
Or do they just become the Scooby Gang?
It might actually be prestige classing to an engineer. So speaking of MacGyvering it, one of them was actually trying to pick one of the padlocks. What she did is she just shoved a bobby pin up there, but it like so had the round bit on it. Like bobby pins are rubberized at the tips usually, and she just shoved a bobby pin up there. And she's like, oh man, we're gonna be stuck in here for the rest. So I had to go over there and slowly inch it out to not break it off in the lock. I'm like, what made you think that would work?
Also, you don't. It's not just a bobby pin. You also need a screwdriver.
Well, you could. It's a small lock.
You could do it with the bobby pin rather than the screwdriver.
You could use
the whole point of the screwdriver is actually to keep the thing twisted so that when you pop the tumblers up, they don't fall back down.
Yeah, you could actually use two bobby pins on this. It's a small enough tumbler. Anyway, they tossed us in a room and there was like a wardrobe on one wall that we couldn't move, but it had a bunch of drawers.
And there was an electric organ and a table and a bookcase, and we basically had to tear the whole room apart. Solve a padlock on the bookcase, which swung forward to reveal a hole in the wall, into a hallway with bars.
And beyond the bars was a table with a mannequin hand on it.
This sounds like a D&D dungeon.
Also some keys. I forgot about the keys. One of the high school girls got them. We found a broom, and there was like a key ring on the far wall, and we're like, okay, now get those keys and don't drop them. And she's like, okay, I got this. And she's just like, sticks a broom out there, goes, perfect precision. It was great.
And then we got black lights and got into the room past the padlock. And
we spent like 15 minutes trying to correlate the we found a drawer full of Scrabble tiles, and we're trying to correlate the numbers on the Scrabble tiles to the
keys
electric
the
organ. The electric organ had black light sensitive numbers on some of the keys, and we're like, okay, so the letter C correlates to the number 1 on the organ. And I kept hoping that we could play a sequence and a panel on the organ would open up or something, but no such luck. And then we had to solve a bunch of riddles and then correlate the answers to the riddles to numbers written in black light-sensitive ink on the answers.
But was there a traitor mechanic?
No, there wasn't. I didn't get a great sword. of any sort. But
then we got out, and it was pretty exciting, because we got out in 44 minutes, according to Tyler.
Yep.
Which is faster than the guy running the place had done it on his test run, and we were the only group to get out that day.
Wait, he test ran it and did it slower than that when he knew all the answers.
Well, he's
didn't know the answers. There's more than one of them, and so he was one of their test dummies for the other group that set it up this time.
Oh, okay. That
like, they take
sense.
Turns designing them every cycle. This place cycles out every 2 or 3 months, I think.
That makes a lot more sense than...
Now, after doing this, I was talking to Alex's dad. I'm like, man, we should totally open up a place that does this. Especially down in, like, Highlands Ranch.
People yeah, we think it's kind of that. A racket.
How much were you charged for it?
We think $25 per person, but that
was
after
was
a Groupon deal.
I got a Groupon deal to do it, and I don't actually remember what it cost, but I think I ended up paying, like, $21 a person.
And they run, like, 8 a day, I think.
Yeah, so you're making... You had 8 people?
We only had 4. If you don't have the full 8, then they fill you in with random strangers.
But yeah, 8 people per slot and an hour and a half slot.
So that's like $200 an hour.
Basically.
But you're probably paying guys minimum wage, so.
Yep, not bad. And also you have to rent the space.
Well, yeah, obviously. But the space was effectively a corrugated aluminum matchbox.
You have to buy and store crappy furniture from Goodwill.
Well, that'd be fairly cheap. I've been to Goodwill. Most of their furniture is not that expensive.
Yeah. My favorite thing about this is that there are a bunch of red herrings. Like, there was a painting with a connect-the-dots style thing written in black light. I'm like, what does this mean? And I was staring at it for, like, 2 minutes. I'm like, it doesn't even make a shape. I'm just going to wander away
Rubik's
now.
Cube.
Yeah, a solved Rubik's Cube. That was pretty good. Some binoculars.
The binoculars,
that
yep.
I think were useless.
Yeah, I think they had an N on them.
There was an arrow pointing up to the ceiling where there was, like, an empty fluorescent light ballast. Don't know what that was about, but... There it was.
The solved Rubik's Cube, clearly, was you had to unsolve the Rubik's Cube.
I tried.
It was permanently solved.
I couldn't unsolve it.
They glued it in place?
No, I tried just, like, screwing with it. Which means, actually, someone who came in after me to clean up the room had to solve it. So
or not.
Or not, yeah, they could have just left
it. If it's a red herring, they don't need to do anything.
It might have been solved because someone in a previous group solved it.
Thinking that
like,
it would open up and have a key in it or something.
You kids were trying to figure out a key sequence to input on the piano. I'm like, guys... How are they going to make a cheap-ass piano that, if you hit the right key sequence, opens a something to give you a thing?
Ryan and I were discussing that on the way home, and we decided that a small microcontroller could actually make that really simple.
Or if they were monitoring you, they could just wait until you got it right and then
hit the button.
That's true. They were monitoring
us. They were monitoring us, and they snuck in and they stole the table.
Yeah, so, like, the first thing we did after we found out this little cubby was, like, we took the hand off the table because one of the girls had found the finger. So we combined them, and then nothing happened, and I was disappointed. But, like, they knocked the table over to look underneath of it with the black lights, and then we, like, all left the room for a while, and, it like, there's only a hole in the drywall behind a bookshelf to get to it. So we wandered back later, and the table was just gone. We didn't hear them, so at some point, someone walked into the room, took the table, and just left.
Freaking ninja style. But then we found the blacklight-sensitive clue that we needed, which was on the wall next to the bars, but you can only see it with a mirror and a blacklight.
Which would have been above the table, and actually the fingers were pointing up at it.
The origin of the hand points to the writing on the wall.
When we first picked up the hand, the index finger missing the fingertip was pointing up right above it. Yeah, probably should have seen that one. I even checked that.
I didn't ever actually see the hand in place, so I don't blame myself for that one.
No, the masseuse and I grabbed it.
Super much chaos. Big fun.
Yeah, no, it was a...
Sounds like it when you got 8 people running around trying to solve everything.
It
well,
was a blast.
The room was like maximum 10 feet square.
Yeah, it was really not
it
large
was
enough
really
for 8 people.
Crowded.
Personal space is not a thing then at
no,
that
you
point.
Have to... No, personal boundaries are gone. It was.
And you hope everyone took a shower recently.
Yeah. The biggest thing is there was a rug that covered about half the square footage in the first room. And we're like, hey, you know what we should do? Pull this rug up and then see what's under us. We had to, like, crowd everyone into the corners while we lifted this rug up and
turns
took
out
a
there
black...
was nothing under the
yeah,
rug.
It was completely useless to have done that.
Good job.
We got, like, one of the teenagers to crawl under the desk for us and, like, shine a black light in there.
I crawled under the desk.
Yeah, I think we all did at some point. I think we rechecked that, like, 6 times.
Yeah, you have to be a little bit nimble because you do have to move around a lot, but it's not, like, athletically demanding.
So you and I would be right out, Jeremy.
Hey, thanks. Speak for yourself, buddy. I know some
you
things.
You two can both walk just fine.
I'd hit my head on stuff, most likely.
Any other games or game-like objects?
Not unless installing cabinets counts.
How about you, Tyler?
I have, actually. Okay, so I played a bunch of Splatoon and was all the way up at A rank. And then just had a terrible run of teammates, and I'm now down to B+.
Carry harder, bro.
I was carry. I had a 17-3, and we still lost.
Carry harder.
Carry harder, bro.
I can't carry that hard. I'm not that strong. The anchor is too big.
Sometimes I feel like this anchor just weighs me down.
Watch some old episodes of the Drew Carey Show and study. Get a bigger backpack. Get that red bird out of your backpack. It's just weighing you down.
So, like, a really good score in Splatoon is, like, 10-3 because it's a 5-minute match. So,
get bigger carry pants.
I was 17-3.
My brother has some awesome carry pants. He could fit an entire PS2 with all the controllers and the power brick into the pockets.
I forgot about that. So, in addition to Splatoon, I've also restarted Pokemon X after hearing Zach do it and saying, you know, I wanted to do a Nuzlocke challenge for a while. So I'm doing a Nuzlocke challenge. I've caught 3 goddamn Buneeries in, like, 3 of my possible slots.
You're boned, my friend.
Megalopony is supposedly okay.
Yeah, but I only need one, and I was going to use it as an HM slave for, like, strength and rock climb and stuff. And
is so, rock climb even a thing?
Yeah. Not in that game.
Is it not?
No, it's in Diamond and Pearl.
So what do I have? I've got not a Greninja, but also not a
Frogadier.
Yeah, thank you. Frogadier is definitely the second evolution. A Bulbasaur, who I'm not evolving until level 37, because apparently it can only learn Seed Bomb before evolving into Ivysaur. I've got an Azurill. It's the unevolved form of Meryl.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
The baby version, right?
Yeah. Meryl. Yes, exactly. I've got a Farfetch'd that I traded for one of my 3 Buneeries.
Do
Farfetch'd.
So I've got a Farfetch'd, which is definitely an HM slave. Also, surprisingly good early game, which I never really realized.
Farfetch'd isn't bad. It just has a terrible move pool, and it's not great either.
It's actually got a pretty decent move pool, in my opinion. The problem is it doesn't scale well because it never gets an evolution.
Yeah, that's probably.
Well, that game, you also don't really need an HM slave, so.
Yeah, that is true.
Especially since you started with,
You need Fly.
You don't need Fly.
You want Fly. Also, you're a completionist, so you want all of the HMs. So
yeah.
You can...
Okay, that's true.
So I can get anything ever. And, like, I already have to backtrack with Cut.
The only one you actually need to almost get to the end of the game is Surf, but then later I think you need Strength on the Victory Road.
Probably. But I like having all of them on me when I'm adventuring. So, what's my other? Oh, I also have a Pidgeotto.
It's a good one.
I think that's 6.
Good is generous.
I mean,
it is, in fact, a Pokemon.
I'm kind of sad I didn't catch Fletchling. I've encountered a number of Oddishes, and I'm like, man, I would have gone for an Oddish instead of another goddamn Buneary. I just finished the finding the Furfru.
Yeah.
You don't
need an Oddish with a Bulbasaur, though.
Yeah, but I prefer an Oddish to a Buneary, so.
So get it nuked and get rid of something and get something new.
I can't. You only get to catch one per area.
You get it nuked, and then the next area you catch something different and more interesting.
I shouldn't kill it. I mean, I might as well have it on reserve in case one of my other Pokemon dies. I have a bunch of things in my... Well, a bunch. I have, like, 3 things in my PC.
Pray for the dragon instead of the Zubat in Zubat Cave.
Yeah. So, that's actually been a lot of fun. The first time you fight Dancing Guy, I forget his name, Torrance? Anyway.
I know who you're talking about, but I can't think of his name.
He has, like, a Corphish that knows Swords Dance, and that was actually kind of a challenge. He almost one-hit KO'd my, who wasn't a Frogadier yet.
Okay, so I just totally imagined, like, a cartoon tuna with 2 big-ass swords who was like, ha! Hi-ya! Hee!
It's actually a lobster.
Then why is it called Corphish? Because
reasons. It's actually a crawdad or crawfish.
Oh!
That makes a lot more
that's
sense.
That's not a lobster.
They're similar.
It looks like a lobster. It evolves
into
a lobster.
Yeah, except a crawfish is a crawfish and a lobster is a lobster.
But this evolves into a lobster.
That's
so
true.
Clearly, you know what that means. Crawdads are baby lobsters.
Yep.
You have to pickle them first.
It's canon. Wait,
that's how they learn. Crawfish are freshwater. Lobsters are saltwater. You have to pickle the crawfish and they become lobsters once they're salty enough.
Oh, is that how that works?
Yes.
I always wondered.
Why you need the salt stone.
So, mostly just been doing Splatoon and the Nuzlocke challenge, played a bit of Smash, but nothing terribly interesting there. Zach!
Well, I was still playing a little bit of Shadows of Mordor this week.
Did you kill Sauron with his own orc?
I actually beat the game before we recorded last time.
I know, you don't kill Sauron. Then you escort Frodo into Mordor with an orcish army.
I was working on it. I do find it entertaining that it could be possible that, you know, the Fellowship of the Ring begins and Sauron goes, I summon forth my orc armies, and then nothing shows up.
He had some asshole humans, too.
Because, like,
that is true.
Summon forth the orc armies. Where are all my orcs?
I'm borrowing them.
I had forgotten, though, and the reason why this came up is because I finished Doom 3, which if anybody will remember, I talked about a couple of months ago. I was about a half hour away from... Yeah, whatever it was. I was a couple, like, actually about a half hour to an hour away from the end of the game when I stopped playing it. So I just picked it up and played it. I was reminded how bad the boss fights were in Shadows of Mordor.
Really? You're like, the last time you talked about it, you were praising the boss fights. So
no, I was praising the fights with the chieftains. There are three actual like boss fights to advance the story.
Oh, okay.
Do you fight a Balrog?
No, you don't.
Do you fight a Kraken?
No.
What other bosses are even in Lord of the Rings? Do you fight an Oliphant?
No.
That would be.
You get to ride a. You get to ride a Grog, which is like a non-on-fire Balrog. I can't think of a better way to put it.
That's really boring.
It's a big...
A golem?
A black, scary...
No, a rock golem?
No, it's not a rock golem. It's a big creature that picks people up and eats
with
them.
Horns.
It's actually kind of fun to ride around on.
And no
really
fire.
Hard to use.
Does it still have a whip?
No.
Oh.
But the problem is, like, the first one is just a combat challenge, which is fine. The second boss is a really pathetic stealth challenge, which I kind of like the fact that they mix it up by giving you the stealth challenge instead. But the third one is just quick time events. The final part of the game is a freaking quick time cutscene.
You know, someone at some point said, yeah, that's good. We should keep that.
We should hit him multiple times.
That's not even as good as the boss fight with Harley Quinn in Arkham Asylum, which is a cutscene where Batman is like, bitch, please.
Pretty much. Well,
hey,
and then,
listen. Punch him now. Push A.
In Doom 3, the final boss fight is actually kind of easy because it's five hits with the Soul Cube and you still have to charge it. So literally the only thing you're doing is running around a circle as it is slowly following you. Yes, and killing the little guys.
Oh, man.
So it slowly follows you around. It's a cyber demon, so it has a rocket launcher, but you're always out of its sight line.
I need more souls.
Until you throw the soul cube at it. It's really kind of pathetic for a final boss fight.
That's unfortunate.
I still don't really like boss fights in those. But the other game that I've been playing a lot more of, besides League of Legends, because League of Legends I've had a long string these last couple of weeks, of just absolutely horrid teammates. You think your Splatoon buddies
carry harder.
Are bad.
Yeah, you need bigger carry pants, bro.
I do need bigger carry pants because I need a way to carry a bot lane that's 0-10 by 10 minutes. Yeah,
that's
at least
pretty
it's
bad. Wait, yeah, in bots? What?
No, a bot lane. Bottom lane.
Oh, okay, that makes a lot more sense.
At least in Splatoon, when somebody kills you, it doesn't make it easier. Or when someone kills your teammates, it doesn't make it easier for them to kill you.
No, it does make it easier for them to win, because it's mostly pushing objectives. So.
Yes, but it makes it easier for them to push objectives and kill people trying to defend those objectives.
Yeah, actually, it kind of does, because it charges up your supers, which make it even easier to kill you. Anyway,
I've had a lot of difficulty with that, but I've been playing a lot of Hyperdimension Neptunia, which I was inspired to go back through and play again.
Again? When, did you already beat it?
No. I started it, remember, forgot to save, and then never went back to it.
Oh, okay.
When Jeremy was talking about Persona 3, because I have a bunch of these games just kind of sitting in my backlog, and I'm like, what do I have? Well, there's this. Okay, let's play this. And it's a lot of fun. Like, the characters are entertaining. The game is just a playoff of itself. It's ridiculous. The main character is a colossal idiot, but fun to hang around with and just listen and watch what they're doing.
So definitely enjoying it.
Oh, yeah. When I'm running around in, like, the exploration areas, I'm usually jumping. Not because it actually makes me go faster, but because the main character has like three or four voice lines that she uses when she jumps. Well, it's like stuff like that. And Boingy is one of them. So like I'm constantly just laughing when I'm playing that game. I'm on a particularly difficult part because I have to kill something within a certain time frame.
Mm.
Mainly because it locks out my skills, which are pretty important for how I play the game. And I don't have the damage to kill it just yet. So I'm grinding a bit to get the necessary stats to kill it.
I was going to say, one of my favorite things about Monokimia is that for no apparent reason, they recorded voice lines for every single person just saying, barrel. And it activates every time you look at a barrel.
Barrel!
Nice.
Barrel!
What about when you look at Queen Barrel?
They would probably also say barrel then, but...
Barrel!
Who is it? The ghost Pamela?
Yes. Going,
barrel! And Garrett's like, barrel!
Nice.
Well, in every single one, they've got it typed out differently, which is the best part.
Yep. How does it play? Is it a traditional JRPG style, or...?
It's...
I haven't actually watched gameplay footage.
It's kind of a hybrid, because it is a turn-based. It uses what seems to be very similar to the Final Fantasy X turn system.
Okay, so there's, like, a speed that each action takes and, like, moves you back a certain number of steps, basically?
Yeah, I think so. I haven't quite figured it out.
I like that system.
But when you're actually, like, attacking, you can set up a... like, series of combos that you want your characters to be able to do, and they're mapped to the AX and Y buttons.
Okay.
So that you can have different things, but it also contains some elements from Agorist the aggress games with guard breaks, where you break somebody's guard, you'll do additional damage.
So Monokami has something like that, but you, instead of guard breaking, you stun them. So if you have a group of enemies, you can stun one of them and then take out the others at your leisure while the other one's stunned.
Yeah, it doesn't actually stun them. They just take additional damage until it hits their turn and they recharge some of their guard, which makes some of those tougher enemies a bit more difficult.
Less tough?
No, a bit more difficult because they'll regenerate HP a lot of the time and their guard.
That's annoying.
It's not that big of a deal. I have quite a few things that have poison on them, so it'll reduce the amount of stuff that they regenerate. Oh, and the last thing I was going to mention is a Kickstarter started up this week.
Oh, yeah, for MechWarrior 2, a machine for pigs.
No, not for MechWarrior 2, a machine for pigs. They're bringing Battletech back to the PC, the turn-based tactical game that I play on Saturdays a lot. And,
I saw that.
It on the page, and they've been live for 2 days as of recording this. When it goes live, they'll still have about 14 days, about 2 weeks left to... At time of episode, they have 1.2-something million
raised. Wow. So they probably don't need any more of my money.
Yes, they do.
Why?
We don't have multiplayer yet.
What? How is that a stretch goal? That should be, like, basic functionality.
It's a stretch goal. Put money in. Do it. You know you want to.
Yeah, I'm probably not ever going to play. I contributed a ukulele and some awesome e-ink shoes, and I think that's my kickstarting for the decade.
I want my shoes.
So. Kickstart $25 to Battletech.
That's, like, more than I paid a ukulele.
Battletech's inherently better. Just going to say that.
Inherently? Well, it does have giant robots.
Is Battletech shoes?
Your argument is invalid, Zach.
Within 53 minutes, they'd actually reached the original goal for just the... It was just going to originally be like a tabletop initially thing, which is why it's a stretch goal. Their original thing was $250,000 was the goal that they hit, and within an hour, they'd already reached that goal.
Yeah, I don't know what Ukulele's goal, how fast they reached it, but I know it was similarly quick.
I just know because I got the email because I'd heard about this Kickstarter before and had it like set to email me when you guys actually start it so I can throw money at you. Yeah, Battletech's coming back to the PC. Go back that Kickstarter so we can get multiplayer. Back it and I will play with you if we reach multiplayer.
Can I just add multiplayer?
I don't know how you would do that. I'm not a programmer.
You go into the...
He does the thing that the programmer do.
Okay.
You go into the settings, and you go to the part where it says multiplayer, and you delete the DIS in front of enabled.
Anyway, so I haven't been playing any Metroid. Jeremy, have you been playing Metroid?
No, I haven't. I've been playing Persona 3, which I finished kind of.
Oh?
There's a second campaign that I have only started.
Really? There's two campaigns in it?
Yeah.
An entirely separate story segment
thing? It's like a sequel.
Okay, that's actually kind of cool, though.
Like I said, I have the second version. They added on a extra campaign.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that.
Where you play as your robot.
Your robot?
Yeah, you have a robot.
Do you have to develop friendships with robot
friends? No, it's sad. There's no friendship development mechanics.
That's, like, the best part of the game.
It is. It also makes the game way harder because you don't have friendship to make your demons stronger. No, but at the end of the game, the main character's teacher totally admitted to him she had a crush on him and wanted to ask him out. And his girlfriend was like, you should meet my mother, and then we should go to a hotel one night when no one notices we're both not in the... So, yeah, but I finished the first part. It was kind of disappointing because at the end, all the main characters were like, oh, man, we only have, like, another month to train. We better go train. I was like, training is fun. I get cool new demons. So the final boss is, like, level 80, and I was level 97 when I went to fight it.
So a bit overleveled for the challenge.
Well, yeah, and then when it was transforming into its final form, the game froze.
That sucks.
So you had to do it again?
Yeah.
That's all. It always
I'm glad
removes
you managed to get
that
past it
level
eventually.
Of weight or gravitas that it would otherwise have when it's like,
oh, man.
This is happening and locked.
So I got to this awesome part in Dark Cloud 2 where, like, people are laying siege to a city you've just rebuilt. So I kept getting to this part, and this cutscene would die at random points, so sound would keep playing. But the video would just stop. And I tried, like, fixing the disc and stuff. Anyway, I ended up having to go and buy a whole nother copy of Dark Cloud 2 because it kept freezing in the same spot. So I'm glad you got through the spot where it froze on you.
It's a known issue with the PS3 version.
Really?
That there are just parts where it freezes. And there are a few infamous ones that they fixed, but...
That's bizarre, though.
Yeah, I'm surprised that they haven't fixed those bugs.
It really sucked because, like, I did the final boss literally on auto battle the second time. That's how overleveled I was. But... He changes forms 13 times during the fight, and auto battle would turn off every time that happened. So I was working on my Gundam model, and I'd have to look up turn auto battle back on.
Oh, that's boring.
I mean, at least it wasn't Matador. Yeah. So
did you destroy the world at the end of it? Because this is a related to Shinten game, right?
No, we stopped the world from being destroyed. We delayed it, actually, because it's Shinten.
That's actually what happens in Devil Survivor 2, is, well, you get the choice of destroying or saving it, depending on which path
you
choose.
Well, in 4, you either destroy it in a different manner, or destroy it in a different manner.
In this one, you either let it be destroyed, or you fight and stop it from being destroyed, because, spoilers for Persona 3, you had death living in you for 10 years, so you can do that.
I mean, is death at least a cool guy?
He's like your best friend because he was living with you for 10 years and didn't know who or what he was, and he's like, human emotions, those are cool.
Seems legit.
And
seems
he comes to you lazy. And he's like, so, is gonna hit the fan. I recommend you kill me, and then you'll all lose your memories, and the apocalypse will take like an extra year, and you can be happy and stuff. Or you could fight the apocalypse and I'll die. I don't recommend that.
So you choose option C, where you fight the apocalypse and everybody survives?
Yeah.
And death lives?
No, you have to kill death.
Oh, that's sad.
Because death fuses with the apocalypse.
What?
The death apocalypse!
They do the fusion dance.
Yes, it's off screen.
Like that scene in Power Rangers.
Not familiar with that one.
You know, they do the thing where they're all like transformation sequence and they go boom, 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 and then it's a giant mech.
Yeah, okay.
Because, you know, logic.
So like Voltron.
Yeah, that sounds more like Voltron.
Totally a Power Rangers thing. I think most people just say like Voltron. I recommend you play Persona 3 and you don't grind too much. The cool personas like Jesus Christ and Lucifer require you
to. Is he seriously one of them?
Ooh, do they meld too?
They fuse into Satan, actually, if you want to fuse the two of them.
Lucifer Christ?
Jesus Christ is a...
It's Messiah, but the way Messiah looks is he's a robot on top of a cross with like...
He's a robot?
He's like, but like where he's been stabbed has been... He's more like a cyborg. Like all the parts where he's been stabbed where you would, you know, crucify someone are replaced with robotic parts.
So in Shinten, Lucifer and Satan are not necessarily the same person. They're usually separate entities. Satan's usually higher.
And this one, there are two Lucifers, one when he's an angel and one after he falls. I don't remember the name of non-fallen Lucifer. I want to say Heliel.
Is one better than the other?
Oh, the fallen one is a little better.
Okay. Good to know. I usually go with Astaroth, I think. He's like a guy riding a serpent.
Yeah, Astaroth is not in Persona 3.
Ah, that's sad.
I can't remember what my team was in Shinten 4.
Yeah, my final team was like Surtur, Odin, Satan, Messiah, Lucifer.
In Survivor, Odin is surprised. He's like level 50, and you get up to like level 80 during a single run of that game. So Odin's surprisingly low level.
Yeah, Odin's only like level 55 in this one, but he has a unique skill that's like Thunder God or something. It's not Thunder God, because that's Thor. But it's
God of magic?
It's Thunder something that guarantees you shock someone.
Oh,
and
wow.
When you shock someone in that game, you're guaranteed critical hits.
That's really
useful. And critical
really
hits knock characters down, and then they don't miss their next turn.
I was going to say, a lot of Shinten games that I know Nocturne had this, where like, if you get a critical hit, you get an extra turn.
Yeah, the way it works is you knock someone down if you get it. And if you knock someone down, you get an extra turn, but if they're already knocked down, you can't get another one.
So basically,
and even
same.
If you combined him with anything, he'd lose that special power. He wouldn't keep it over.
He can transfer it over, but you're not guaranteed to transfer it over. And I didn't feel the need to fuse Odin with someone.
Because I know
Odin
was in Shinten 4, you could actually pick the skills that you wanted to transfer, but I don't think any of them actually had the different like unique skills, or I don't remember seeing them.
You were talking about fusing Odin with things, and Ted's like, Odin would do it. I'm like, no, that's Zeus.
So Odin was all about accruing new knowledge, and he'd go to any lengths to do that. So if he had to fuse with someone, he would have.
Yeah, like
he gave up his eye for it.
My Jesus had the ultimate death technique, die for me, from Alice. So yes, you can fuse over special abilities.
Why does Alice have die for me?
Because it summons a bunch of heart soldiers to stab someone.
I thought it was like you take someone's place when dying or something.
No. Anyway, I think that's all I've been playing. Oh, no, I started Metal Gear Solid 5.
Oh, yeah.
I've only done the first level, so I think I'll save it for next time. But it's kind of like a fusion of Arkham, Call of Duty, and Skyrim.
That sounds like a game I'd get behind.
That sounds like there's way too much going on.
There's a lot going on. And I think Hideo Kojima has finally figured out how to do an hour of cutscenes without boring players and making them feel like they're going through an hour of cutscene.
If I saw a cutscene that lasted that long, I'd set the controller down and be doing something else.
Well, it has gameplay all throughout it, which is how he got away with it. Also, it has a guy who's on fire and riding a flaming alicorn after you, and you have to get on a Ocelot shows up, is like, get on, I'm on your side, get on! And he hands you a shotgun, he's like, get it off of us!
a guy on fire riding a fiery alicorn after you.
Yes. This is the first.
Are you tripping balls
you
at the
may
time?
Be. You're escaping a hospital. So
and
you
also
may be.
Revolver Ocelot, I'm pretty sure is dead.
This is 1984.
Oh, okay.
The game begins with you waking up from a coma after 9 years, listening to David Bowie's Man Who Sold the World.
Terrible way to wake up.
Yeah, the Nirvana cover is way better.
I'd be put out, too.
So yeah, I think I'll talk about that more next week. This week, we have an incredible snowboarding game to talk about.
Hey, this is the best snowboarding game we've played so far.
Hey, Zach.
Yo.
You're looking a little stiff. I think you should move your body, move your body.
Yeah, we played 1080 snowboarding for the Nintendo 64. That was a lot of numbers, but I assure you there was a video game in there.
Yeah.
So yeah, 1080 is a snowboarding game. It's early N64. The graphics in it actually look really nice for 1997.
Yeah, they're not bad. I mean, they're certainly passable. Unfortunately, Rob Haywood looks like Cyclops to me, so.
He kind of does.
So you have 5 borders to choose from with slightly different stats.
You have
different nationalities.
The black guy, the white guy, the Asian guy, the Asian girl, and
Canadian guy. So all of them get really put out if you go to select them and then go back. They're like, oh man, you suck. Except for the Canadian guy's like, hey, whatever, eh?
It's Canadian. That's incredibly rude for a Canadian.
So the game has, I guess, 2 modes, racing and doing tricks.
Well, time
yeah,
would you count
attack.
Time attack being there? Because it has a time attack mode.
Oh yeah, that's the relay type mode. Did you
yeah,
play
that's
it
just
at all?
Racing. No.
You go through gates and you get seconds added to your time, basically.
Okay,
it's a
gate.
Relay.
The way you race, you hold Z to crouch, and that makes you go slightly faster. You can also jump to go off jumps, but then, kind of like Excitebike, you have to orient your board with the control stick to land properly.
And you've got about a third of a degree in which to be properly aligned, or you eat.
It's never the same way you have to land. It's not flat, it's not slightly back. It never seems to make a great deal of sense.
It depends on the surface upon which you're landing, and being slightly sideways when you land is bad. And if the, like, polygons underneath of you are slightly too disparate, that's bad. And that you don't really have any control over that.
So if you don't get it right, you fall, and obviously your racing opponent is going to get ahead of you. But also you take damage a la F-Zero, but there aren't magical pit stops to go through to relieve damage.
Fortunately, the tracks aren't that long, so it's actually decently hard to knock yourself out with damage.
The race is like,
says
what, 3 minutes?
I never did it.
You never did it while we were playing either, so.
I did, though.
I did.
No, I did, too.
Did you?
Yeah, I died.
Did you?
Yeah.
I don't remember that.
I ate a lot of snow.
So, I mean.
A lot of walls.
Yellow snow, it was bad.
There's a little bit of trade-off between holding Z to go fast and not holding Z so you can turn.
Yeah, but I don't think it's a very interesting racing game. There's nothing like Mario Kart items or mini turbos. There's not much in the way of changing gears because it's a snowboarding game.
You find the Mario style of picking up crap and throwing it at people interesting. I don't. But this one doesn't have that much interesting stuff because it's one-on-one.
It doesn't disprove my point.
No,
there's
nothing
interesting in this game.
Well, you're using different examples of things that would be in Mario Kart.
What's an interesting thing to you?
Well, there's only one other person on the track, so you're not having to worry about running into each other that often because there's also nothing else on the track
to
run into.
It's really hard to catch up if you're both relatively competent.
If you're against the person, yes, but if you're against the AI, it's rubber banded to you.
Yeah, the rubber band AI is really bad in this game.
But
that was a different point.
The corners aren't that interesting either. They're all very gentle curves.
And then they have to
be there, since you have no brakes or anything because you're on a snowboard, there's not really anything to worry about. Steering, most of the time, unless I was on ice, I just kept holding down Z through almost every corner.
They do try a couple different things. For example, they have ice, like Zach mentioned, which makes you go slightly faster, but you can't turn. They have rock, which just slows you down.
Trees.
Unless you can use the rocks as a jump.
Yeah, that is true. You can jump off of rocks, although jumping is generally a bad idea if you're trying to win a race.
Because you can't land properly.
And even if you do, you lose so much speed going through the air.
Yeah.
It's not like Snowboard Kids where you do a bunch of cool tricks and that speeds you up when you land.
Yeah.
Or Mario Kart now.
I wish this was a game with Snowboard Kids. It was a much better snowboarding game.
They also have a bunch of shortcuts in various places. So.
And that is kind of interesting.
Usually relating to some kind of narrow ledge that you have to jump off of to get to. So if you screw it up, you're going to slow yourself down.
Yeah, so it's definitely something you have to be confident. Like, I remember the first time I was going through one of the courses, Alex was like, there's a shortcut there. I'm like, yeah, I know there's a shortcut there, but I wasn't confident in my ability to go through it without eating it.
And if you eat it, you're going to be slowed down, obviously. It doesn't matter where you're going.
if you're bad at snowboarding, you're gonna have a bad time.
You should have worn a helmet. None of these characters wear a helmet.
They're pros. That's why they don't wear helmets.
I should have worn a helmet. It hurts.
Rob Haywood is best character.
Like Zach was saying earlier, the AI is really rubber bandy. It's decent at staying ahead of you. In particular, I didn't realize at first crouching made you go faster, which made this game really, really hard.
I didn't realize how to make myself go faster. I knew there was a button, because there's almost always a button, but I couldn't figure it out for a little while.
But then you'll just get ahead of them, and then near the end, they almost pass you. It's really unsatisfying.
Yep. I didn't notice them almost passing me, but I did notice the fact that if I fell behind, it's almost as if they would put on the brakes and wait for me, which is unsatisfying because...
Especially if you're playing against a Canadian guy.
Then the game is just patronizing you.
Okay, there's also a trick attack mode. Is that what it's called?
Yeah, you basically just try to do a bunch of jumps.
I didn't play much of it, but there are basically two types of tricks. You can hold R and do circles with the control stick to...
You rotate in midair, basically.
Do 720s and 1080s. Or you can do various grabs by hitting B in a direction, which is not very interesting, to put it... bluntly.
It is, however, really reminiscent of later games that involve some sort of board objects.
They come up with really funny names for it, like stale fish, nose grab. Like,
those are the actual names of those things.
Yeah, those
I
are
know,
actually
but it's
the
a
names.
Stale fish. You're like, guys, really? That's what you decided to call it?
Also, the indie, and there's like the sideways
the indie
hobo.
Nose bone.
Yeah, oh man, I forgot about the nose bone.
The indie nose bone. You're like, guys, noses and bones, not a good mix.
Well, you know how they got that name, right? The nose bone.
You go for an indie and then you eat it on your nose bone.
Yeah. So many of them broke their nose bone trying to do the trick. They might as well just name it
that.
That
was one of those, like...
Alex, you really liked this game as a kid. Or so you told me. I'm not sure I believe
did. Okay. You. Okay, as with most games I played as a kid, my brother was massively ridiculously better. But he and I used to play just for hours. I was never any good at the, you know, match races against the computer kind of thing. But my brother and I would race, and it totally worked for me, and there's...
it helps that they're, like, 2-minute races. That's
yeah, it's,
nice.
It really
they're
does.
Quick, and every once in a while, I would manage to just smoke him, because he would land a jump funny, because, you know, the jump landing mechanics are a little sketchy, and I have a huge nostalgia filter for this game, so I was, you know, like, ah, right. It's not as good as I remember it being, but, again, the nostalgia filter is pretty aggressive, so I still had lots of fun.
I mean, it's not bad.
It is at least functional as a racing game.
The problem
is
there's
sure,
so many.
Mario Kart's a thing.
There are so many like adequate racing games that it needs a hook, and the game kind of lacks a hook other than its snowboards.
Well, I think that was the idea. Is number one, it's a sprint race. There's no laps in this game. It's a sprint. Also, one thing we haven't mentioned is that you have basically a set number of lives or retries on each 1v1
when you're trying
to
do the campaign race.
Yeah, so you have a certain amount of lives between how many times
lose.
You can
it's
restart.
Not a problem.
Again, it's very F-Zero.
I lost down to my last one on the second track and then didn't lose. Well, didn't even come close to losing.
I got my butt kicked a lot.
And then including when we were playing before we recorded, I didn't lose there either.
That's because true. Zach cheats.
Zach is not cheat. I'm just good.
Zach is empirically the best in this game. Yeah, you know, when I set high scores in pinball, it's because I'm cheating.
I don't cheat. I'm not that smart.
No. When Alex says you're cheating, it means you're beating Alex. That's code. because clearly I would win more if everybody didn't cheat. It's got nothing to do with my skill as a gamer.
I think the hooks for this game sounds are, right. One, the graphics, really, really good for the time it came out. And two, the other racing games available on the N64... not very good.
Was Cruisin' USA out yet?
I'm looking at that right now.
Cruisin' USA was on the 64 at least.
That's a completely random side note. I'm looking
also,
to get a 3DS homebrew.
San Francisco Rush was available on the,
yes,
on
it was.
The N64, and that
okay,
was actually
Mario
pretty
Kart
good.
Had come out already, as well as San Francisco Rush. Cruisin' USA, which I think this is better than, but we'll get into that in a little bit. There actually were quite a few decent racing games out.
But this one's got snow.
Wave Race was out already.
Oh. Wave Race. That's a good game.
San Francisco Rush was a fantastic game. I really lament the fact that that's not available for us to play.
So I think really the only hook is the graphics. And if you're super into snowboarding because it's the 90s, it's got that.
Yeah.
Was Snowboard Kids out yet? I imagine not.
I don't know.
I don't
Let's
think
look.
So. I think Snowboard Kids was 98 or 99.
Yeah, Snowboard Kids was 98. Published by Atlas.
Really? Thanks, Atlas, making games I liked even when I didn't know your name.
I wish that game was out on the Virtual Console as well, because that was a much better snowboarding game.
Oh, wait, it was before 1080. It was 1 month before 1080 came out.
Well, okay, a month is not, but they were developed concurrently.
Yeah.
Oh, come on, but 1080 had Rob Haywood.
That's true.
Rob Haywood versus Rob
Dion
Haywood.
Blaster.
Dion Blaster. I love
that. What was
name.
The Japanese guy's name?
Kitsuke Inuhara.
It's so much longer than every other name.
But Snowboard Kids had Slash, Nancy, Jam, Linda, Tommy, and Shinobin.
I love that last name is just like randomly Japanese.
Speaking about F-Zero a little bit, I wanted to talk about this game's influences and what it inspired. Because you can really see Nintendo's other racing games in here. You can see Excitebike. Excitebike is all about that zen of going off the jump and then landing your bike correctly, which I think is what they're going for with the snowboard. But the 3D and the specificity you need just sort of ruins that zen feeling.
Yeah.
Also, going up jumps isn't fun. In Excitebike, you get that zip sound effect.
Or isn't this one, there's just that horrified dread of, oh god, I just hit a jump. I'm going to bite it when I land.
Well, and it's an active detriment, because even if you land the jump, you lose speed in midair. There's no good reason to go after them if you're actually trying to go for a race.
Is that actually true? I feel like my brother always beat me by taking the jumps.
I timed it against a computer, and I just stayed on the course, and the computer went over jumps, and the computer would lose air in the middle of a jump. It might just be rubber banding. That might be how they make
Maybe
the
you need to play with
down.
Me, and we'll play.
Yeah, to measure it.
For science.
The other influence is F-Zero. It has both the lives and the damage mechanic from F-Zero. But F-Zero has the boost mechanic that you have to weigh your health against going faster. This just punishes you when you make mistakes, and you're already punished because...
You lose health.
You lose speed.
Oh, and you lose... Yeah.
I didn't even realize I had a health bar until the last level.
Okay, yeah. Well, some of us aren't so talented.
It is hard to accrue enough damage. The only way when I was racing against the computer that I accrued enough damage to lose is when I was going to lose a race anyway. I'm like, I wonder what happens when you fill up your damage meter. And it turns out you just lose a race anyway. So.
I didn't even notice it until the last level when it started blinking at me. And I went, oh, I have a health bar?
Oh, yeah, it makes a really annoying noise.
Why the hell do I have a health bar?
Also, the life mechanic. I don't think the life mechanic is bad, but I also don't really know that it adds anything to the game.
It's not really specific. I initially thought it was this particular course in the tracking.
But also, about 8 months later, which is how long this game took to develop, Tony Hawk's Pro Skater comes out. And I think they may have been influenced by the trick system in this and said, hey, we should make this a game, and also we should make it good.
Well, that was a lot more forgiving for landing tricks.
To be fair, the tricks are actually the same names, but almost all the tricks are named the same. The way you pull them off is very similar.
Well, yeah, you just have wheels instead of snow.
Yeah, well, and there's more variety in most of the skateboard tricks, because you can do things with, like,
moving your
feet around.
You can flip your board under your feet.
Snowboards actually do grinding, too.
They do
grinding.
Not
in this game.
I don't... No, there is no halfpipe in this game, is there?
There's a halfpipe.
You can't grind on it, though.
Oh, that's weird.
No, you can't grind on it, but there is a halfpipe.
That's a pretty significant trick for boarding. Of any kind, I guess. I guess surfing, you don't really grind anything.
Zach, this came out in, what, 1997?
I'm going to grind that dolphin, bro.
But, like
we
you said...
We hadn't figured out grinding in 1998.
Well,
this is way too old school for that, Zach.
Well,
come
when
on.
Tony Hawk's came out, like, 8 months later or something like that, they had grinding in that one, because I played that one.
It's because of the internet.
Yeah, Tony Hawk Pro Skater is a game I remember fondly and had, like, awesome Goldfinger songs before they started to suck. And
all right, anything else we want to say about 1080 before we put it on the list? Really mediocre racing game. Good graphics for the time. But
and
I did not
so
enjoy
it. It is so satisfying when you've been going down this course for days and days, and all of a sudden you make a jump that you've never made before, and you end up in a secret cave, and it's a shortcut.
Yeah, finding shortcuts is satisfying.
I love finding
the
shortcuts.
The problem is once you memorize them, you just always use them.
Unless you do like me, and you just totally eat it off the edge of the jump every time you try. But
that was pretty funny.
Yeah, no. Hey, I beat you.
I know, but you like went tumbling over, you're like, poof.
Hey, I made the shortcut, though. And then you totally ran into the giant yellow barrier.
Yeah, how did the archway taste, by the way, Tyler?
like banana
lemon.
Pudding.
All right, so we have a list at our website, www.lasttimeonvideogames.com, of all the games we've played from best to worst. At the top is Beautiful, Wonderful Chrono Trigger. At the bottom is Terrible, No Good, Rotten Space Harrier. In the middle is Excitebike.
Ah, wow.
And that's where I think we'll start, because as I mentioned, 1080 has taken some mechanics from Excitebike and bungled them. I think Excitebike is more zen, more satisfying, more on the NES.
I'm not arguing with
you. I
like
Excitebike more.
I'm not arguing with you.
No,
I agree.
I prefer Excitebike. I still play that game occasionally. So.
I haven't played enough of these games to have a vote. I hereby abstain.
All right, right below Excitebike, one below, is our next racing game on the list, Crazy Taxi, which has more popular music and has more fun arcade frantic feel.
It's a different feeling.
Mechanics. It has a hook, which is, driving into people, having them jump into your taxi, and then taxiing them places.
We have not yet mastered the art of taxiing people by putting them on the front of your bumper. I'd prefer Crazy Taxi.
So do I.
Yeah, I think I agree with that. I had more fun with Crazy Taxi at any rate.
Next game on the list is a racing game anyway, is F-Zero. Again, I think I like F-Zero more. The graphics aren't really better, but good graphics on Super Nintendo impress me a lot more than these things on the N64. There are fewer playable racers now that I think about it, only four. But I think the damage mechanic makes a lot more sense there when you have things like the pit stops and the boost to play with your health mechanic.
The races last longer in F-Zero, so you have more of an opportunity to use those. This one,
the damage is more useful as a mechanic, or more impactful, I guess.
In that one, yeah. Well, in this one, because races last minute and a half, 2 minutes.
There might as well not even be a damage mechanic.
It shouldn't be in there, I agree.
I actually think the controls handle sufficiently better in 1080, and that the courses feel substantially less post-apocalyptic to me in a pleasing way, that I actually prefer 1080 to F-Zero.
I kind of agree with Tyler. I like the difference of the... It's not a circuit track, obviously. It's just a downhill race. But even though it's a subtle thing with how the interplay of the different terrains interact with you, at least it's something that's there.
So I'm outvoted, so it will go above F-Zero. Not quite in the middle, but a racing-ish game we have in there is Sonic the Hedgehog on Sega Genesis.
The first one?
Wait, that's another episode on. Hey, kids, you haven't heard the Sonic episode? You should.
Technically, you walked in the middle of it. And okay.
So I think Sonic's better.
I agree.
It's more fun to find secret. Okay, that's two of us.
I didn't play that one.
Yeah, that is also true. Sonic's more colorful. It's just generally more fun. It's still not a great game, but I think it's got more going on than 1080.
So dead in the middle between Sonic and F-Zero is Nobunaga's Ambition. Should I choose something else?
I mean, we could compare them. Which did we have more fun with is a good indicator.
1080.
Nobunaga is so much more ambitious, but those combat mechanics are really bad.
At the very least, I didn't really have a lot of fun with Nobunaga's Ambition, partly because the mechanics are terrible, but also, with 1080 at least, there are problem areas. It handles just fine, and I can play it with friends.
The multiplayer does help.
Mitigate quite a bit, in my opinion.
My argument against Nobunaga is that it's a solved game. There is an optimal strategy. You should always employ it.
All right, so new middle point is SimCity 2000. I think I like SimCity more. It's got more room for self-expression. It's got a lot more going on.
Yeah, it's certainly a more complicated game, and I think it's to its benefit in this case.
Technically speaking, it would be solved because Jeremy figured out the optimal strategy.
That is true.
But
I'm not interested in the Nobunaga.
So yeah, I'm not deriding
it. Self-expression, so it's a solved game, but there are reasons not to go with the optimal strategy.
I agree with you. I just was saying, or noting that technically, since you found an optimal strategy, which is going to exist in any game, that's why metas exist for anything.
Yeah,
most effective tactics available.
Multiple high-level strategies, none of them are optimal, and some of them are skill-capped.
SimCity better than 1080.
Agreed.
I agree.
2000 is greater than 1080.
Right below is Super Mario Land, and I like Super Mario Land more. It's a tight little platformer. It's weird and quirky. It's a lot more engaging to me than 1080 is.
I'd take the snowboard, to be entirely honest with you, but I don't really care for platformers to begin with, and I don't really like the Super Bowl power-up.
All right, Tyler, tiebreaker.
Yeah, no, I was thinking on it, because my gut instinct was 1080. I'm not sure I agree with my gut, though. I'm going to have to give it to Super Mario Land. I found the game generally more engaging, and it certainly got more of my time, so.
So the final question becomes, above or below Donkey Kong?
The original Donkey Kong?
Yeah.
I think below, actually.
Yeah, Donkey Kong is way more influential. It's way more Shigeru Miyamoto'd, I presume. He might have actually had something to do with this game.
I don't actually have any defense on it. Because like I said, I thought it was better than Super Mario Land. I preferred it.
So 1080 Snowboarding will go above Nobunaga's Ambition and below Donkey Kong. So speaking of things that don't matter, Tyler, what are we going to play next week?
Well, you see, I have no idea.
We're going to play the ukulele.
I think we're going to play Rystar. Rystar, I don't know. It's a game about an anthropomorphic star made by Sonic Team.
Rystar?
I always say Rister, and I always think of that Penny Arcade comic about Sonic Generations, where it's like 1992 Sonic and 2012 Sonic is like Echo the Dolphin and Rystar. Like, hey, where's 2012 Rystar at? We had to go party. Next time on Last Time, we'll all be invincible.
Thank you.
This has been a production of Last Time on Video Games, copyright 2015. All the games, movies, and other media mentioned in the show are copyright their respective owners, in case that wasn't obvious. Past episodes, articles, and other information can be found at www.lasttimeonvideogames.com. If you'd like to contact us, send an email to ltovg@lasttimeonvideogames.com. If you'd like to find us on Twitter, we are at LTOVG. We can also be found on iTunes. If you wanted to help us out, we would really appreciate if you left us a 5-star review. No extra lies were lost in the recording of this podcast.
Jeremy, we'll make the magic happen.